The views expressed in the following program are those of the writers and producers and do not necessarily reflect the views of KORC, its underwriters, or community airwaves.
This is Wendy Byrne for KORC's News, Music, and Civics, and I am sitting with Ward 5 Councillor Charlyn Ellis, and we are about to pour a cup of tea and talk about the fiasco. As a member of your ward, and as a person who has voted for you every chance I've had, and as a member of the Climate Board...
Who was at the meeting.
I like to say I was in the rooms when it happened. So it still shocks me that this even happened, but here we are, maybe finally coming out the other side of it. And I'm happy that you're willing to talk to me today as for KORC.
You get the first scoop.
I have. How exciting. Cheers. <Yeah. laughs> Let me put some milk in my tea.
Okay.
Did you have any idea that news was coming?
I had no idea. I came home. I had a meeting at 3:30. I checked my email. There was something from my lawyer saying, you won with the documents. And he wanted to talk. And I said, well, after I have this meeting. So I came home, talked to the VO guy.
And VO, just for people who might be listening, VO is the vendor who supplies the electric scooters?
Yeah,
on
campus.
Right.
And
great.
They really positive, and then I called my lawyer. He found out around 9:30 in the morning, and he suddenly was getting pinged by the media, and he was like, oh. How did this happen?
Something's happened. Something changed.
Yeah.
Right, because we've all been waiting. The lawsuit's had been sort of stalled or sitting on Judge Aiken's desk in Eugene or whatever. That's how I like to think of it. I see it there sitting, waiting, and for something to happen. And for quite some time, months.
Yeah,
months. What do you want to say about
I am
that?
Glad that she actually passed down the decision. Rather than having it sit there and rather than having it just declared moot, because that kind of left the whole situation in limbo.
Right.
And we really need having that decision at the beginning of the new council term, I think will be really helpful moving council forward this year.
I didn't see that there would be anything gained by just having it drop. As a taxpayer, as a ward member, as a person who pays attention, I wanted some resolution, so I'm glad that it didn't just disappear.
I am too. I can see just being done, and there are definitely people who wanted it just to disappear, but having the resolution clearly stated that the passage is unconstitutional, both in state and federal court, is pretty significant.
Yeah, it's remarkable. Think of all the cities that have that Section 23F in their charter or some language like it.
I have heard from the city of Bandon's mayor.
Uh-huh.
They have it. And she sent me a long email. I'm going to write her a note back.
That's great. And they are going to have a
charter
review?
They're going to have to rethink it.
Charter revision? Yeah.
They're going to have to.
Just like Corvallis needs to have a charter revision?
I feel like with this judgment, that thing just sort of, it's unconstitutional.
There are certain parts to it that always made sense in the regard of not trying to get a particular person a job or influencing.
Nepotism should probably be in the...
that your personal business was contracted to do something. Like nepotism and cronyism, obviously...
Should be in there.
Should be in there. But it was too broadly interpreted.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm glad that we got a clear, unambiguous decision from the judge.
The language, I tried over the course of the last year and a half to read some of the more complicated legal documents, but I'm no lawyer. And what I found with the law is that sometimes a word that I think means a certain thing that it meant to me in my education, my understanding of English doesn't always mean the same thing to lawyers or in legal speak, so I tried to keep that in mind. But the retaliatory finding, to me, that says that even like sort of doubles down on the fact that the city made mistakes.
Yes.
In the pursuit of, you know, removing you from council back when they did in the fall of 2023.
Yeah, this was not well, it was not thought through, mm-hmm. but it also was not a legal action. Yeah, I appreciated her calling that out.
Yes. It's an interesting arc when you think back to early October 2023 to now, that in October of 2023 you were being presented with papers that would remove you from council, and now you're the vice president of mm-hmm. leadership
yeah.
in city council. That's just sort of, that's not, that irony is not lost on me.
It's true. We did have a change in council, and I think that has shifted the tone of council. I'm feeling really hopeful mm-hmm. about our new council. I feel like we've got new voices, we've got new thoughts, we've got new thinking. We've got younger voices in there, which is always great. And then we've got Jim Moorfield coming in with just that solid ability to articulate policy.
Right. That's a nice it's a nice combination of both youth and experience.
Yep.
Entering the council. Mm-hmm. And I agree. I'm optimistic. I like the changes that I've seen and heard already
yeah.
with just, you know, one meeting and one work session under the belt. Mm-hmm. So far, there's been a real nice energy
yeah.
in the room
yeah.
there.
I'm very excited about that. And I think, you know, as vice president, my goal is to keep the stuff that the city has to do moving forward, because there are things we absolutely have to do as a city council. And then figure out times to weave in some of the larger, the new concerns coming in with our new counselors.
Mm-hmm.
So they feel like we're able to do both, keep the city moving forward with the stuff we have to do, and then also make sure that we're acknowledging concerns and topics of discussion that individual or in small groups of counselors are bringing forward. So we have to figure out how to balance those two things, and I feel like that's one of the jobs of the vice president,
right.
is to keep what the topics in mind. I've got a list going,
mm-hmm.
And just keep coming back in leadership to make sure that we schedule the topics that all counselors want to talk about.
How to keep the big items on the calendar and not get lost in the weeds on everything,
mm-hmm.
but also
keep an eye on stuff. Yeah.
And making sure that the new counselor's concerns are heard,
mm-hmm.
but that the goals from the previous council or the big picture items don't get lost
yep.
either. Right. So I guess at some point in the relative near future, we would see charter review discussion come
charter
up.
Review has definitely been on the agenda.
I remember that coming
for
up.
For a year and a half
yeah.
now. Even before
yeah.
this, before mm-hmm. this whole fiasco, it was something we were thinking about. With the new legal team, they looked at our charter and they saw some things from their broader experience that they thought we should clarify.
Great.
And they told us what some of those things were. And so they provided an overview. One of the benefits of the new legal team is that they represent so many cities, and they come in with a perspective that our old legal team didn't have, although they knew Corvallis very deeply.
Right.
So we made a trade-off. We lost the deep Corvallis knowledge, but got a broader statewide
right.
perspective.
I remember that
really
meeting
helpful.
with the I think it was a work session with the new city attorneys when mm-hmm. they sort of outlined a few areas that should be addressed
yeah.
in the charter, and it does make sense to do that all at once, since the ultimately whatever changes are made have to be approved by a vote
yeah.
of the registered voters of Corvallis. So that, if that could happen in November, then if that vote could happen in November or maybe even March of next year,
mm-hmm.
there's probably not time to make it happen.
It's not going to happen. No.
No,
we
sooner.
Haven't started.
Right, right.
I think the plan is to list all of the topics that we need to address and then address them in sort of in chunks. So one of the things was, how do you replace a counselor who leaves?
Mm-hmm.
And so that all of the stuff relating to that would probably be one chunk. And then I think the idea is to send that to the voters and then move to the next and then work our way down the list and figure it's going to take a couple of years to address everything.
It would be good to just get that timeline out there
mm-hmm.
for yourselves and go from there.
So you all know
yeah.
where we're going.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you feel any sense of maybe pending awkwardness that certain topics might come up in the near future while you're vice president of leadership that might be challenging to have discussions? And
the whole thing has been awkward.
I know.
It's just been awkward. Icky, sometimes icky and always awkward. I believe we should be moving past that absolute, the specific awkwardness to more abstract conversations around some charter. Mm-hmm. And that will, then it's just like, okay, we know we need to deal with this. I think the awkwardness will be resolved pretty soon. Right. I hope.
Because there's lots to do.
There is so much to do, and we shouldn't be wasting our time on this. We should never have been wasting our time on this.
So some people have said that they saw this as a climate issue because mm-hmm. it was the actions that sort of came about sort of started at a Climate Action Board meeting. I've kind of seen it more as a free speech issue and as a misunderstanding or a misinterpretation of the charter. What do you think?
I do feel like the city has been dragging their heels on climate. I think that is a legitimate concern of climate activists in town, that the city could be more forthcoming, should have hired a person, that person to replace, should have replaced Catherine.
Call it what you will.
Yeah.
Right, right.
To continue doing the work that I listed before I made my motion to the city council. I had a whole bunch of things that person could be doing.
Right.
Clearly, there has been resistance to doing that work.
Mm-hmm.
So you could argue that it's a climate issue, but I see it as a much broader issue. I think that this was an attempt to silence dissent. And that could dissent could be our climate activists. It could be our activists around homelessness. It could be our activists around a whole...
Transportation. Forest stewardship.
Right. H&V, mm-hmm. whatever, it was definitely, I see it as an attempt to silence dissent.
Mm-hmm.
I thought when I was called down that I was going to be, there was going to be discussion around the time, place, and manner that I had been saying was unethical and all of the things they claimed it was bad for the environment.
For people who are listening who may not know the time, place, and manner.
That was a camping ordinance. We can only camp in specific places. And only
at specific times. And
yeah.
Right.
You can see signs in certain parks around town if you go looking for them now. But I thought that's what they were going to complain about,
right.
is that I had been a little too forthcoming in my opposition to that.
Mm-hmm.
Had no idea that it was something I had done 2 months before at a climate board meeting and then at the city council.
Right. I always thought it was interesting. I have this visual in my mind of the charter suddenly deciding it was offended. I know. I find it, I play it like a little cartoon in my head, and then charter rising up and screaming offense, and then this starting the tidal wave of events that happened.
Yeah.
But right, it does seem to be, it is more of a...
The pattern of sayings, not that particular item, I think is what I was...
Do, in looking and reading the documents from the case, I felt like in watching council meetings, I saw the chilling effect on other councilors.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like the entire year of 2024, councilors didn't necessarily speak freely. I don't know if they spoke freely amongst each other.
I would
or in
say
meetings,
they
or
also
sort of
did not. We did not speak to one another, and that's
right.
Why I think the council got really awkward,
mm-hmm.
because people were not speaking to one another in the way that they had been beforehand. I do think that it had a chilling effect on councilors. I also think it had a chilling effect on people who usually come to testify,
mm-hmm.
because we heard a lot from the people who want around the Israel and Palestine issue right at that time, and after that was done, we had nothing.
Right. Not a lot of testimony.
Yeah,
right,
people did not come, and
yeah.
I've had people say to me, I am nervous about raising concerns about what's going on because I don't want my program impacted.
Yeah, I don't want retaliation. There's
mm-hmm.
that word again. Maybe, you know, now that we're very early in 2025 and it's a new council, it might be a good year for some sort of retreat or council team building exercise that's really an exercise instead of that, my words, strange thing y'all did last year in the spring.
And that was weirdly awkward, too.
Yeah, considering how fresh the
yes.
situation was, to have it be sort of like you guys trying to have an exercise in
trust
and how to develop, that seems like that's, I mean, any family counselor could tell you need to solve the problems before you build the trust,
mm-hmm.
right? So that was weird.
So that solving the problems, getting at that root, is something we still need to do if the community has a stomach for it. Because it happened. We could say mistakes were made in the passive voice and move on. Mm-hmm. Or we could look at what actually happened. Why were there attempts to stop it along the way and it didn't? Why not? Why was Councillor Schaefer shut down at the meeting when he brought it up early on?
Gabe brought it up fairly early on too, mm-hmm. and also was sort of shut down with that. And right.
So
like a little bit of forensics on it to understand exactly what might have been done differently to mm-hmm. stop it sooner, right?
Yeah.
To identify it, stop it sooner.
Yeah, so,
right.
You know, who was involved?
Right.
We don't know. We don't mm-hmm. have the names of anybody. It feels to me like if you're impinging on somebody's character as a public official, you should be looking at them face to face, not hiding behind a title.
Right.
Yeah. But I feel like something like this, the people who are the complainants...
They should be able to say...
It was me,
So yeah, I agree. I think the community has the stomach for it. I mean, my part of the community does. We'll hear from hopefully some other people in the near future and see where it goes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The council will not push without a push from the community.
And maybe even especially the new members, because they're new.
They're new.
Right?
They're trying to figure out how it works.
Right.
New and old, I think, they will not push unless they hear that this is what... Because it'll cost more money. It's been expensive.
So if people want to know, they need to write their city councilors. They can write all of council.
Absolutely. Always write all of council.
Right. They can also network with their city councilor when they mm-hmm. see their city councilor in public.
Yep.
They can go to the library when there's government corner.
Right.
There's one every other week.
Yep.
So it happens with regularity. And
I think
usually
it's me next time.
Yeah. And it's posted on the city's website.
Yep. It's right there. You can find out who's there. And you can go in and talk to your counselor. You can set up an appointment, especially if there's two or three of you, to talk to your counselor. You can email mayor and council, but please call out your particular counselor so they know who you are.
And what ward you're in.
And what ward you're in. Because we have four new counselors, and they probably don't know all their constituents.
I should think not. Yeah.
Yeah, so calling out that I am in ward whatever is always helpful as well.
Great. Yeah.
But if people want to know what happened, then they're going to need to call. They're going to need to ask for it.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Details are good.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think that's a great place to leave it, and maybe we could have conversations in the future.
Yeah.
As we learn new things and as things evolve. Really appreciate your time and you joining me here. This has been Wendy Byrne, KORC's News, Music, and Civics with Ward 5 Councillor Charlyn Ellis. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is KORC, News, Music, and Civics. I'm Dan Krall. The following is an article from PhilomethNews.com, dated January 11th of 2025. Philomath School District planning to ban cell phone use in classrooms. This is written by Brad Fukua of Philomath News. Student cell phones will be banned from Philomath School District classrooms with certain exceptions, Superintendent of Schools Susan Halliday announced during a board meeting a couple of Thursday nights ago. The plan is to attempt implementation at the end of January, according to Halliday. She said, "We're at the half-year point, so we would go for the rest of this school year and then adjust as needed, and move on from there and also watch for what legislators do." Halliday said it appears possible in the upcoming legislative session that there could be bills on cell phone usage in schools, including possible bell-to-bell bans. The state legislature will convene on January 21st, this upcoming Tuesday. "We want to start implementing sooner rather than later," according to Superintendent Halliday, "because we've heard the hue and cry of our staff saying, it's killing us trying to be able to manage and monitor cell usage." The school district's administrative team, which includes principals, have been working on the issue. They're the ones doing most of the dialogue at this point because the biggest thing is our administrators have to help with the enforcement side of it to be able to support the teachers in the classroom, Halliday said. She continued, so there's got to be the agreement there of, here's what we agreed to, and here's what we're committed to. At the meeting, Halliday went through results of surveys that were available to parents, students, and staff. One question asked, do you believe cell phones have a positive or negative impact on student learning? Just over 90% of staff and just under 78% of parents overwhelmingly said yes, the impact on learning is negative. Perhaps not surprisingly, most students, just over 71%, indicated that cell phones have a positive impact. Sophomore Maggie Real, one of the student representatives on the school board, provided an example of what she has witnessed at Philomath High School and how classmates on cell phones can be annoying. She said, some students don't even turn their volume down or brightness down, like in the middle of class, and it's just like super annoying to hear an obnoxious song playing or something. It's pretty distracting and kind of takes you out of the element and is kind of frustrating, she said. The Philomath School District's definition of exactly what a classroom ban means has not been finalized. Halliday did say that students will not be required to turn in cell phones and can keep them in pockets or backpacks. They will just not be allowed to use them in the classroom. High school and middle school students will most likely be allowed to use them outside of classroom time, such as during lunch and other breaks. Some schools have banned cell phones not only from classrooms but from buildings entirely. There were some survey people who said, why do they need them at lunch? They need to talk to each other, Halliday said. We're weighing those kinds of things. We need to watch and listen and know how we need to adapt, she said. There will be exceptions to this rule. An example might be a teacher allowing students to access their phones to participate in a classroom-structured activity. For example, scanning a QR code to access a specific website as part of a lesson. Superintendent Halliday said she also knows that there will be occasions when students who have worked out situation-specific agreements or accommodations with staff will be allowed to go outside of the classroom to access their cell phone. We're not going to hide them away in pouches and things like that, but we've got to recognize that we've got to make some moves, Halliday said. She continued, we don't feel like we need to go that far in terms of the history of what we've had within our district and the respect and responsibility there. The high school actually did purchase pouches for student cell phones, and Halliday said some teachers have been using them. The administrative team plans to meet again next week to work on the plan's language and educational components and to identify in what areas they need more information. We're getting into the finalization of what the plan would read and what the consequences are, Halliday said. We also talked a lot about the differences there would be between an elementary level and the middle school, high school level. The expectations and the availability will probably look different a little bit in both of those settings. In other words, the superintendent and administrators have a lot of details to figure out. We'll see where we end up next week in terms of lining out everything to be able to share with students, to be able to share with staff, Halliday said. The decision to implement a cell phone ban does not need to be approved by the school board, and per policy falls to the superintendent and the administrative team. Our policy says we can make the decisions of whether or not cell phones are allowed, and so we don't have to change anything, according to Halliday. What we want to do is implement and watch, and then if we need to at the end of the year update the policy, we will. If a policy update is needed on that particular topic, then the board would become involved, she said. That was the article, Philomath School District Planning to Ban Cell Phone Use in Classrooms. That comes from the website philomathnews.com and was published on January 11th of 2025 by Brad Fukua of Philomath News. For KORC News, Music, and Civics, I'm Dan Kroll.
You're listening to KORC News, Music, and Civics. The following story was in the Los Angeles Times and was published on January 15, 2025, and it was written by staff writer August Brown. The day that the Eaton fire began, Jake Viator had just finished some work remodeling his mid-century Altadena home. Viator, a mastering engineer for the local record label Stone's Throw, moved into the rustic Foothill neighborhood with his wife in 2022. He had a garage studio in a neighborhood full of friends making music. On the night of January 6, 2025, Viator had planned to grab sushi with his neighbor Jimmy Tamborello of indie group The Postal Service when his wife texted that Eaton Canyon was on fire. Outside, it was like seeing a bomb had been dropped, he said. A wall of orange spinning and whipping and exploding like nothing I've ever seen before. It looked like hell on earth. He drove around honking and screaming at neighbors to evacuate. After he turned downhill to flee, Viator drove straight to Scottsdale, Arizona, where his wife and 2-year-old daughter were staying. They would never see the home where their child was born again. Viator said, "I loved Altadena and the dream of Altadena. I just had never been so at peace in a place." In a cruel coincidence, the Palisades and Eaton fires wiped out two neighborhoods with unique significance in LA's music industry. The Palisades fire claimed Ocean View Studios in Malibu, where Grammy winners lived, and recorded platinum album Steps from the Sand. 50 miles away, the Eaton fire demolished a neighborhood adored by working artists and industry pros seeking space to work amid nature. Viator said, "Every single musician I know in Altadena lost everything. I kept waiting to hear somebody be like, 'I'm cool,' but no, the list is just unfathomable. Everyone I know, every single person, every business is gone." The fires ripped a path of destruction, one so total and instantaneous that it was concussive for LA. The infernos have claimed at least 25 lives and more than 12,000 structures that included architectural landmarks and generations of family homes and thousands of acres of nature. Life savings, memories, and livelihoods all cinders within hours. In the days after, Los Angeles area musicians and industry pros began to circulate a spreadsheet noting who had lost a home or workplace. The list stretched over 200 entries. Laura Lee Rodriguez, known professionally as Empress of, lost the Altadena home she shared with her mother. DIIV band member Zachary Cole Smith's family lost their home while his wife is expecting a baby. Hip-hop artists Fat Tony and Madlib lost their home bases. So did band Splain, podcaster Yassi Selek, and Benny Maupin, a member of Herbie Hancock's elite Headhunters funk band. 70 years of history, family photographs, instruments, car, and other family heirlooms completely gone, Maupin's son wrote. The list cuts across class divides. Songwriting legend Diane Warren lost her beachfront home, as did the Foo Fighters' Chris Shiflett and Grammy-winning Adele and Wicked producer Greg Wells. So did scores of lesser-known session musicians, publicists, tour crew, club promoters, and radio DJs. Many of them, like Viator, had congregated in Altadena. Stately and natural in the foothills of the San Gabriel Valley, just north of Pasadena, the neighborhood became a haven for musicians and artists who could no longer afford studio space in neighborhoods such as Echo Park and Highland Park. You could have a backyard turkey coop next to your vocal booth, all within a 30-minute drive to downtown L.A. Taylor Goldsmith, frontman for the rock band Dawes, lost his home studio to the Eaton fire. His family, including his wife, actor and singer Mandy Moore, and their 3 children were fortunate that their main house survived. Yet Goldsmith is shell-shocked by the Eaton fire's toll. He said, "I thought we were snug in our neighborhood, but we were so wrong. It feels surreal." Goldsmith lost all his equipment, in the Eaton fire. Vintage guitars that were irreplaceable, ones my hands learned to play on that meant so much to me, he said. He worries that this will traumatize his community in perpetuity. You can't go around thinking everything can be ripped away from you in 3 hours at any time, Goldsmith said. It F's you up, but I don't want to let this be what turns me away from living here. I don't want to give up and move on and make pain permanent. That was the story from the Los Angeles Times, Fire Charred Two L.A. Music Utopias, Will They Ever Recover? It was published on January 15th of 2025, and it was written by staff writer August Brown. You're listening to KORC, News, Music, and Civics.
This is KORC, News, Music, and Civics. The following is an excerpt from Democracy Now!, which aired on Friday, January 17th, 2025. For more information on national and international news, visit democracynow.org. This is KORC.
Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel's war cabinet and government is convening to vote on the long-awaited Gaza ceasefire agreement. Two far-right Israeli cabinet ministers, Finance Minister Bezalel Smotrich and Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir, have voiced opposition to the deal, with Ben-Gvir threatening to quit if it's passed. As Palestinians await confirmation the deal's been secured, Israel continues its deadly attacks across Gaza. Over 113 Palestinians have been killed since the truce was announced Wednesday, at least 28 of them children. This is Sami Abu Tahoun, a displaced child living in Al-Nusrat camp.
I only wish to return to Gaza City for one reason. I wish to see my father again. Since our displacement, I lost something essential in my life, the presence of a father. When my mother asked me to go pray, I refused, because I wanted to pray with my father. We hope the war will end next Sunday, as they say in the meetings.
If approved, the ceasefire deal will go into effect Sunday, including the release of the first hostages. We'll get latest on ceasefire after headlines. Israeli troops have carried out another day of raids across the occupied West Bank. On Thursday, Israeli forces raided the Askar refugee camp, shooting and wounding three Palestinian teens. Separately, Israeli military vehicles entered the grounds of the Arab Evangelical Hospital in Nablus and took up positions in the courtyard. Overnight, Israeli soldiers raided the Tulkarem refugee camp, where there were reports of gunfire and clashes with Palestinian fighters. This all follows an Israeli airstrike on the city of Jenin Wednesday that killed six Palestinians and left scores injured. On Thursday, mourners held funeral processions for the dead, even as they welcome the Gaza ceasefire deal.
The Jenin refugee camp was supporting the Gaza people during the 15 months war on Gaza, and thus we expect calmer times for Jenin.
Since October 2023, near daily Israeli raids on the West Bank have killed nearly 800 Palestinians and injured 6,700 others. Over 14,000 have been arrested. Outgoing Secretary of State Antony Blinken was confronted by two journalists as he delivered his final news conference at the State Department Thursday. The Gray Zone's editor, Max Blumenthal, disrupted Blinken just minutes into his address to reporters.
You waved the white flag before Netanyahu.
We'll have the time to take questions at the end.
You waved the white flag before Israeli fascists.
We'll have the time to take questions at the end.
Your father-in-law was an Israel lobbyist. Your grandfather was an Israel lobbyist. Are you compromised by Israel? Why did you allow the Holocaust of our time to happen? How does it feel to have your legacy be genocide? How does it feel to have your legacy be genocide? You too, Matt. You smirk through the whole thing every day. You smirk through a genocide.
Blumenthal was addressing State Department spokesperson Matt Miller at the end of the video. Matt Miller then ordered security to preemptively remove independent journalist Sam Husseini, forcing him to shout his questions to Blinken towards the stage as he was forcibly carried out of the room, then handcuffed.
Everybody from Amnesty International, to the ICJ is saying that Israel's doing genocide and extermination, and you're telling me to respect the process. Criminal! Why aren't you in the Hague?
Right before the journalist confronted the Secretary of State, Blinken thanked the press for, quote, asking tough questions. Earlier this week, a ProPublica report detailed the Biden administration's repeated pattern of issuing empty threats and warnings to Israel over the past 15 months, allowing Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu to dismiss any red lines from Washington while continuing his genocide in Gaza with impunity. Senate confirmation hearings continued Thursday for Trump's cabinet nominees. Scott Bessent, nominated for Treasury Secretary, advocated for more deregulation and higher tariffs and opposed increasing the federal minimum wage. Bessent also called for extending Trump's 2017 tax cuts, which is projected to add $4 trillion to the federal deficit.
This is the single most important economic issue of the day. This is pass-fail. That if we do not fix these tax cuts, if we do not renew and extend, then we will be facing an economic calamity.
Trump's pick to lead the Interior Department, former North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum, praised Trump's agenda of so-called energy dominance, but vowed to, quote, follow the law and follow the Constitution. Former New York Congressmember Lee Zeldin, nominated to lead the EPA, asserted, quote, I believe that climate change is real, unquote, but would not commit to regulating greenhouse gases if he's confirmed. Meanwhile, in Florida, Governor Ron DeSantis named Florida Attorney General Trump loyalist Ashley Moody to fill Marco Rubio's Senate seat. Rubio is expected to be confirmed as the next Secretary of State. Miami Herald reports Moody sued the Biden administration 9 times since 2023, including on immigration policy, transgender rights, COVID-19 policies, and student debt relief. Rudy Giuliani has settled with 2 Georgia election workers he was found guilty of defaming. The deal allows Giuliani to avoid a trial and keep his apartment in New York and condo in Florida in exchange for an undisclosed payment to Ruby Freeman and Shay Moss, and has pledged not to further defame the 2 women. The mother-daughter duo welcomed the opportunity to, quote, move forward with our lives, unquote, after the deal was reached, calling the last 4 years a living nightmare. In California, some mandatory evacuation zones around Los Angeles have been reopened after firefighters made significant gains battling 2 massive wildfires. As of Thursday evening, the Palisades fire was 27% contained, the Eaton fire 55% contained. Officially, the death toll from the fire stands at 27. But a new study by Yale University's Climate Connections predicts that toxic smoke combined with disruption to the economy and health may lead to thousands of deaths over the coming years. It's already the costliest wildfire event in California history. A report from Wells Fargo and Goldman Sachs estimates the cost to insurers alone could reach as much as $30 billion. On Thursday, dozens of climate activists with the Sunrise Movement held a protest outside of Phillips 66 terminal in Los Angeles, demanding oil companies pay up for the wildfires and other climate catastrophes. Last year, oil and gas interests successfully campaigned to kill a California bill that would have forced polluters to help pay to help cover the cost of climate disasters. Meanwhile, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has blamed the fossil fuel industry for the devastating wildfires in Los Angeles, linking them to the broader climate crisis in a speech Guterres gave to the UN General Assembly on Wednesday.
Look no further than the hills of Los Angeles. It has gone from the home of disaster movies to a scene of disaster. Who pays the price for climate destruction around the world? Not the fossil fuel industry, pocketing profits and taxpayer subsidies as their products wreck havoc. Every people suffer.
The U.S. has announced sanctions against the chief of Sudan's armed forces, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan. The Treasury Secretary accused Sudan's military of lethal attacks on civilians, including the use of chemical weapons and the denial of humanitarian aid. This comes just days after the Biden administration imposed sanctions on Sudan's rival paramilitary group, the Rapid Support Forces, and a week after accusing the RSF of committing genocide. The UN says more than 150,000 people have been killed since fighting erupted April 2023. 11 million people have fled their homes while famine has spread to at least five regions. Earlier this week, a local volunteer network said over 120 people were killed during shelling in Omdurman, the twin city of Sudan's capital, Khartoum. In the U.S., an Ohio woman who was charged with felony abuse of a corpse after having a miscarriage has filed a federal lawsuit against the hospital and healthcare providers who treated her, as well as the police and the city of Warren for their role in criminalizing her pregnancy loss. In 2023, Brittany Watts was denied abortion care at 22 weeks pregnant, despite being told her fetus was not viable and that she was at risk of hemorrhaging and sepsis. She miscarried at home several days later and was criminally charged 2 weeks later. Later, after a hospital worker reported her to police, falsely claiming she improperly disposed of the remains of her pregnancy. President Biden is making history, commuting the sentences of nearly 2,500 federal prisoners convicted of nonviolent drug offenses. The order will benefit people who received harsher punishments than they would have under modern sentencing laws and practices, including those given lengthy sentences based on distinctions between crack and powder cocaine. Biden has now issued more individual pardons and commutations than any other U.S. president. And the meatpacking companies Purdue Farms and JBS will pay $8 million for exploiting immigrant children who worked in their slaughterhouses after reaching a settlement with the Labor Department. The companies came under scrutiny in recent years after a series of reports revealed unaccompanied youth, mostly from Mexico and Central America, are being maimed and burned while working at meat plants, often on graveyard shifts. Federal law prohibits children from working in slaughterhouses due to dangerous conditions. The money will go to the children as well as organizations that assist them, including Kids in Need of Defense. And this latest news, the Israeli Security Cabinet has approved the ceasefire and hostage deal. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
That was an excerpt from Democracy Now!, which aired on Friday, January 17, 2025. This is Cork, News, Music, and Civics.
You're listening to KORC, News, Music, and Civics. The following is an opinion piece from the Gazette Times section, As I See It, dated January 4th, 2025. The opinions spoken are those of Rick Stagenborg, the president of the Linus Pauling Chapter of Veterans for Peace, founder of Soldiers for Peace International, and a member of Jewish Voice for Peace. Headline, U.S. has legal, moral responsibility to end a genocide in progress. A small item in a recent edition of the paper, Israeli troops storm and burn hospital in Gaza on December 18th, was remarkable. While the incident might appear to be just another Israeli war crime, the piece was notable because it broke the near total silence of the media regarding the program of extermination going on in northern Gaza. The full story of Kamal Adwan Hospital provides a lens on the horror of genocide, largely concealed from those who only know what they see in mainstream media. In October, Israel declared that any Palestinian unwilling or unable to leave northern Gaza immediately would be treated as a terrorist. According to whistleblowers interviewed by Israel's Haaretz, the military zone that has sealed the north from southern Gaza since then, has been treated as a free fire zone. No one can leave even if they want. All food, water, medicine, and other essentials of life have been blocked from entering in defiance of repeated orders from the International Court of Justice. The population has been under continuous bombardment. Nearly all are starving. With the onset of winter, babies living without decent shelter are freezing to death. Kamal Adwan was one of the last semi-functioning hospitals left in northern Gaza. It had been rocked repeatedly by explosions for more than 2 months before being stormed. Just days before the raid, an American-made bomb killed 50 people in an adjacent building used by staff. Hospital director Dr. Hussein Abu Safaya bravely stated, "We will leave when the last Palestinian leaves." Israel justified its violent assault on patients and staff with allegations presented without evidence that Hamas fighters were based there. Abu Safaya was among those forced to strip in the freezing cold, then was kidnapped and taken to the infamous Israeli torture site of Sadi Timan. The raid was nothing new for the occupation forces, but in views of conditions in the north, it is even more inhumane. It is part of a process of ethnic cleansing of northern Gaza, as former defense minister and Israel Defense Forces chief Moshe Ya'alon concluded. The campaign of extermination in the north is an intensification of Israel's genocidal policies throughout this war. This ethnic cleansing appears intended to clear the way for reestablishing settlements in the Strip, as called for by leaders of all three parties in Israel's governing coalition. It is a harbinger of what is intended for the rest of Gaza. Left unchallenged by the U.S. government, this is likely to be the fate of the West Bank, where a killing spree by settlers and the occupying forces continues largely unreported in the U.S. The International Court of Justice declared a year ago there was a plausible case for genocide. More recently, detailed investigations by the two most respected human rights organizations in the world, Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch, have concluded that genocide is occurring. Anyone who still refuses to accept that, at a minimum, genocide may be occurring in Gaza is akin to a Holocaust denier. The U.S. has a legal and moral responsibility to do everything it can to stop a genocide in process. Instead, it is abetting one by continuing to send offensive weapons to Israel, ignoring the will of most Americans. Those who believe in government by the people have a duty to protest. A recent study found that in Gaza as a whole, 96% of children expect to die at any time. Half hope for it. If that does not stir the heart of anyone still clinging to the fiction that Israel is only defending itself, they have no heart to begin with. That was an opinion piece from the Gazette Times section, As I See It, dated January 4, 2025, from Rick Stagenborg, MD of Albany, who is president of the Linus Pauling chapter of Veterans for Peace, founder of Soldiers for Peace International, and a member of Jewish Voice for Peace. You're listening to KORC, News, Music, and Civics.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of KORC News, Music, and Civics. We bring you this program every Sunday from 1 to 2 p.m. You can hear a repeat of the program Mondays from 5 to 6 p.m. right here on KORC. We'll take a break from the news for just a few moments and listen to Corvallis musician by the name of Neil Gladstone, who passed away April 5th last year. He was a beloved songwriter, musician, poet, and a comedian. He passed away from Parkinson's disease on April 5th at his residence in Corvallis last year, with his wife Barbara by his side. We do play Neil Gladstone songs occasionally here on KORC. Here's a track of his called The Best You Can Do from his album Mixed Company. This is KORC, News, Music, and Civics.
When you go up, you're up. When you come down, you're down. Sometimes it takes a life of mistakes. Turn you around. answers are hard to find. One thing I can surely say is from the long view, the best you can do is give your love away. Some of us reach for the stars, your heart. Nobody knows which way the wind's gonna blow, but one thing I can surely say is from the long view, the best you can do is give your love away. Against a rising tide of greed and confusion, you seem to be our passion, most of us never do. Some of us stand with our hat in our hand, waiting for our dreams to come true. Life is a dangerous game, it's easy to be afraid, but from the long view, you can do is give your love away.
That was The Best You Can Do by Neil Gladstone, a Corvallis musician who passed away last year on April 5th. He had a wealth of music available, which you can still find online if you look up Neil Gladstone. This is KORC, News, Music, and Civics. Thanks for joining us for today's program.